Mahabharata, Chapter 82. Vidura instructs Dhritarashtra. In Hastinapur, Yudhisthira heard from his men that Arjuna was approaching the city. Hearing that all was well with his brother, he joyfully set about making preparations for his sacrifice. His priests had arranged for the sacrifice to be performed on the full moon day in the month of Magda. They selected an auspicious spot on a large level plain outside the city and sanctified it with Vedic rites. A golden altar was constructed, and numerous mansions were built for the visiting kings. Messengers were then dispatched to all parts of the land to invite them. Soon numerous monarchs began to arrive, as well as thousands of ascetics. The Pandavas greeted them all warmly and offered them the finest accommodation. As the day of the sacrifice approached, Yudhisthira himself went out of the city and entered the royal pavilion. As he proceeded, he saw the sacrificial arena, resembling Indra's heavenly capital. Triumphal arches had been built, and the ground was paved with gold bricks. Jars, jugs, ladles, seats, and other necessary paraphernalia had been arranged around the fire altars, which surrounded the main altar. The main altar shone like the sun. Yudhisthira did not see anything that was not made of gold. The guests were filled with wonder at its opulence. They were fed sumptuously by thousands of servants and provided with anything they desired. Yudhisthira arranged that drums and cymbals should be sounded each time 100,000 Brahmins had been fed. The crash and clash of those instruments was heard again and again throughout the day. There were hills of food, huge tanks of ghee, and lakes filled with milk. The citizens joyfully came out to attend the sacrifice, dressed in colorful silks and adorned with burnished gold earrings. The women were decorated with jewels and ornaments, and their faces shone like radiant moons. A few days before the sacrifice, Krishna arrived with his son Pradyumna and Satyaki and Balaram. Numerous other Yadus and Vrishnis accompanied him, and they all entered the sacrificial arena, like gods descending from heaven. Yudhisthira and his brothers worshipped Krishna and Balaram, and offered them the best mansions for their residence. Krishna spoke about Arjuna, who had not yet returned from his expedition. He told the other Pandavas that he had received news about him, and that he would be arriving the next day. After the Pandavas and their guests had spent the night in their mansions outside the city, they went the following day to greet Arjuna. With Dhritarashtra at their head, they proceeded with a large number of Brahmins and citizens. In a short while, they saw the sacrificial horse, looking as beautiful as the celestial horse Uchashravas, followed by Arjuna on his blazing chariot. Yudhisthira and his brothers welcomed Arjuna with affection, praising his feat in subduing the world's kings and bringing the horse back safely. Krishna embraced him and went with him into his mansion, where they spent a pleasant evening together. When the day of the sacrifice arrived, Vyasadeva came to Yudhisthira and said, "The time for the sacrifice has come. The priests await you. O king, you should make offerings 3 times greater than are required by the ordinance. Give 3 times the required charity to the priests at the end. In this way, you will acquire the merit of 3 Ashvamedhas. This will certainly free you from any sin that you may have accrued from the war." Attended by Krishna and thousands of kings, the sacrifice was duly performed, according to the instructions of Vyasadeva and Domya. Everyone present considered it no less magnificent than the Rajasuya had been years before. When it was complete and the time had come to give dakshin, Yudhisthira offered the entire earth to Vyasadeva, saying, "O great sage, this is the proper dakshin ordained for the sacrifice. Take this earth, conquered by Arjuna, and divide it among the rishis. I will enter the forest, for I cannot take the property of Brahmins." The crowd buzzed with excitement at Yudhisthira's announcement. Everyone applauded him, even the gods praised him. Vyasadeva, pleased, replied, "The earth is now mine. O king, I now give it back to you. What need does an ascetic have for this world? How can Brahmins rule the world? Take it back and rule over it as enjoined by scripture." Hearing Krishna confirming Vyasadeva's words, Yudhisthira replied, "Let it be so." He then arranged for all the golden sacrificial utensils to be distributed among the Brahmins, along with heaps of gems and millions of milking cows. The frugal Brahmins accepted only enough for their survival. Large amounts of wealth were left, which Yudhisthira then distributed to the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. No one attending the sacrifice left without a valuable gift, and everyone went home praising Yudhisthira. Krishna and his followers stayed for a few days after the sacrifice, enjoying the Pandavas' company. And then, after being worshipped by Yudhisthira, they returned to Dwarka. Yudhisthira now felt free of sin. Having made arrangements for the world to be properly governed by pious kings, he continued to live happily with his brothers in Hastinapur. The years passed quickly for the Pandavas after the sacrifice. Although they thought constantly of Gandhari's curse, dreading the day that Krishna would leave the world, they treated her and her whole husband with the highest respect. Dhritarashtra felt as if he was lord of the earth. Hundreds of servants waited upon him and provided him with anything he desired. All the kings who came to Hastinapur with tribute for Yudhisthira were asked to offer their respects and worship to Dhritarashtra. The blind monarch, receiving treatment like Indra in heaven, forgot his grief and was happy. Gandhari was also attended and served with respect by Kunti and Draupadi, as well as Alupi, Chitrangada, and the other Pandava ladies. With the exception of Bhima, Yudhisthira and his brothers acted toward Dhritarashtra like disciples toward their guru. Seeing their humility and obedience to his commands, Dhritarashtra regarded the brothers like his own sons. When he remembered Duryodhan, he felt only shame. His son had destroyed his family, and he had never been so respectful toward him. But Bhima could not forget the ills the Pandavas had experienced at the core of his hands. Unable to forgive the blind king, he reluctantly offered him respect, but inwardly seethed at seeing the royal treatment accorded him by Yudhisthira. Dhritarashtra also could not feel much love for Bhima, who had killed his sons. He tried to offer the Pandava his blessings, but his mind was still filled with malice toward him. Through his own servants, Bhima arranged for many deeds that were disagreeable to Dhritarashtra. He caused the commands of the old Kuru chief to be disobeyed and looked for opportunities to give him pain. Out of anger, he would stand within Dhritarashtra's hearing and utter hurtful words. Slapping his arms, he would say, "With these two mace-like arms, I have crushed all the blind king's sons. Due to coming within reach of these arms, the wicked Kauravas have all been dispatched to death's abode." Or he would speak other words, offensive to Dhritarashtra. Although hurt by Bhima's words, Dhritarashtra said nothing about the situation to Yudhisthira. He felt too indebted to the Pandava king to disturb him in any way. Gandhari also tolerated Bhima's painful utterances, considering them the inevitable reactions to her and her husband's past actions. 35 years went by, with Yudhisthira ruling the world. The Pandavas thought always of Krishna, and became increasingly concerned as the day approached when Gandhari's curse would take effect. Seeing Parikshit grown into a powerful prince, exhibiting all virtuous qualities, they began to think of retiring. They knew that although death in battle was the best way for a Kshatriya to give up the body, death in the forest while practicing asceticism was an honorable second best. Pious kings always spent their last years in the forest seeking spiritual perfection. One day, the Pandavas heard that Vidura had returned to Hastinapur. The Kuru minister had been gone for many years on pilgrimage, practicing austerities. Although the Pandavas occasionally received word of him, they had not seen him since he had left. They often remembered their uncle with affection. When he returned, they ran toward him, overwhelmed with happiness and love. One by one, the five brothers fell at his feet and clasped them. Vidura was met by Dhritarashtra, Kripa, Sanjaya, Gandhari, Kunti, Draupadi, and all the other palace residents. Vidura appeared emaciated by his long practice of asceticism, but he shone with spiritual energy. He had spent much time in the company of Brahmins, hearing extensive spiritual instructions from the powerful Maitreya Rishi. Desiring to see Dhritarashtra and the Pandavas before the end of his life, he had come for a final visit to Hastinapur. Yudhisthira and his brothers worshipped him with offerings of argya and other auspicious items. After feeding him sumptuously, they had him seated in the royal assembly hall, where he would always sit when he had acted as Dhritarashtra's prime minister. Recalling the many times that Vidura had helped them when they were young and suffering from Duryodhana's antagonism, Yudhisthira sat at his feet and said, "My uncle, do you remember how you always protected us, along with our mother, from calamity? Your partiality, like the wings of a bird covering her fledglings, saved us from destruction. While traveling across the earth, how did you maintain yourself? At which holy places did you render service?" By his own developed spiritual power, Yudhisthira could understand that his uncle had achieved a high level of spiritual realization. Like himself, Vidura had always taken pleasure in hearing from the rishis and practicing asceticism. He had not been sorry to leave the city, but had accepted it as a providential arrangement for him to perfect his life. Seeing that the old Kuru minister had achieved that perfection, Yudhisthira said with folded palms, "My lord, saints like your good self are holy places personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn every place into a place of pilgrimage." Yudhisthira asked Vidura what he had seen on his long pilgrimage, and Vidura gradually described everything. Having become self-realized, he was experiencing the highest transcendental happiness and was ready to give up his material body and assume his eternal spiritual identity. Out of compassion for his brother, Dhritarashtra, whom he could understand was still materially attached, he decided to remain for some time in the city. Realizing that the blind king was fast approaching the end of his life while still living in spiritual ignorance, Vidura wanted to instruct him one last time in order to break his attachments to sense pleasure. A few days later, Vidura found an opportunity to speak with Dhritarashtra. In the presence of all the Pandavas and their wives, he addressed him with strong words. "My dear king, you should get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you." Vidura sarcastically addressed Dhritarashtra as king. Since arriving back in Hastinapur, he had understood the situation. He saw how Dhritarashtra was enjoying the respect and honor that Yudhisthira offered him, and considered himself king. Now, as he faced the last years of his life, he was becoming afraid. Death would take him from all his power, and where would he go? So many sins had been perpetrated under his rule. Vidura was frank. "This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. O king, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form as eternal time has approached us. Whoever is under the influence of supreme time must surrender his dear life, what to speak of his wealth, honor, children, land, and home. Your father, brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead. You have expended the major portion of your life. You are an invalid, and you are living in another's home. Decrepitude is fast overpowering you, yet you still try to enjoy life, living at Bhima's expense." Vidura had seen the tension between Dhritarashtra and Bhima. He mentioned it to provide the necessary impetus for Dhritarashtra to renounce his position and to practice asceticism. Trying to invoke Dhritarashtra's shame, and also his self-respect. Vidura continued, "Your life is little better than that of a household dog. What need is there to live such a life, subsisting as you do on the charity of those you tried to kill by arson and poisoning? You insulted their wife and usurped their kingdom and wealth, and now you are dependent on them. O Bharata leader, despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to live even at the cost of your honor, your miserly body will certainly deteriorate like an old garment. Nothing in this world is permanent." The Pandavas listened in silence. Vidura was as sharp as ever. Yudhisthira reflected on his profound counsel. If only Dhritarashtra had been wise enough to take that counsel years ago, how different things might have been. Surely now, though, Dhritarashtra would heed his brother's words. He had absolutely nothing left to live for. "That man is called undisturbed, who goes to an unknown, remote place, and, freed from all ties, quits his material body when it has become useless. He is certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of the material world, and thus leaves home, depending fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead residing in his heart. Please, therefore, leave for the northern hills immediately. Soon the iron age of Kali will set in, and the atmosphere will be opposed to the practice of spiritual life." Vidura's words cut into Dhritarashtra. The old king silently digested his instructions. As always, his intelligent minister spoke the truth. What was the point of continuing his useless and broken life? Certainly no auspicious destinations were achieved by the man who attempted to enjoy his senses until the last minute of his life. As Vidura correctly pointed out, where was his shame? How had he continued to live in the Pandavas' house after everything that he had done to them? And the unforgiving Bhima took every opportunity to remind him of that. Dhritarashtra felt his attachment and fear give way to detachment. He made up his mind to leave for the forest. Knowing that Yudhisthira would not easily accede to him going alone as an ascetic into the wild, he did not reply to Vidura. His departure would have to be secret. He folded his palms and bowed his head to his brother, calling for his servants to take him to his chamber. Vidura followed his brother, leading Gandhari back to the chamber. He spoke alone with them and arranged a day when they would leave for the forest together. Vidura, too, desired to end his days while practicing asceticism. Wanting to avoid scenes of grief and difficult farewells, they decided to leave secretly on the next full moon night. In his assembly hall, Yudhisthira thought of Vidura. It had been months since Vidura had delivered his instructions to Dhritarashtra, and neither of them had been seen since. Dhritarashtra had left instructions that he did not want to be disturbed, being attended only by Sanjaya and one or two other intimate servants. Yudhisthira guessed that he had wanted to be alone with Vidura and receive further instructions. Perhaps he would think of retiring to the forest. But today was the annual Shraddha ceremony in honor of his sons. He would surely wish to be present. Yudhisthira decided to go and see him. Accompanied by his brothers, he made his way to Dhritarashtra's quarters in the palace gardens. The fragrance of exotic blossoms carried on the warm breeze as he walked through the manicured lawns and flower beds. Varieties of birds filled the air with delightful sounds, and beautiful maidservants sat in groups around lotus-filled ponds. The brothers entered Dhritarashtra's chamber and found Sanjaya sitting alone. Seeing his despondent expression, Yudhisthira felt anxious. Yudhisthira could understand that Dhritarashtra had left. "O Sanjaya, where is our old uncle? Where is my well-wisher, Uncle Vidura, and my mother Gandhari, who is afflicted still due to her son's demise? My uncle Dhritarashtra was also mortified due to the deaths of his sons and grandsons. That great man took care of us when we were rendered fatherless as children. Undoubtedly, I am ungrateful, for I repaid him by killing his sons. Has he taken my offenses seriously, and along with his wife, finally drowned himself in the Ganges? That Dhritarashtra had gone without telling him filled him with sorrow. Out of humility, the Pandava king considered that it could only be due to his own offenses. With tears welling up in his eyes, he looked at Sanjaya, who covered his face with his hands and said nothing. The old charioteer was grief-stricken and unable to speak. His master had left without saying anything, even to him. Sanjaya gradually pacified his mind with his own intelligence and wiped away his tears. Looking up at Yudhisthira, he said, "My dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty, I have no information about your two uncles and Gandhari. O king, I have been cheated by those great souls. Although I remain Dhritarashtra's obedient and most confidential servant, he has gone without telling me anything." Yudhisthira looked at Dhritarashtra's altar, where he had sat each night with Gandhari, making offerings to the deities. The sacrificial fire had gone out, and the deities had been removed. Controlling his sorrow, Yudhisthira moved closer to the distraught Sanjaya and gently consoled him. At that moment, Narada Rishi suddenly appeared before them. Yudhisthira and his brothers, along with Sanjaya, offered their obeisances at his feet. Obviously, he had come with a message. After offering him a seat, Yudhisthira said, "O godly personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt, who is grief-stricken by the loss of her sons. Without doubt you know everything, including even the Lord's plan. Please soothe our sorrow with your profound words." Narada replied, "O pious king, do not lament for anyone, for everyone is under the Supreme Lord's control. Therefore all living beings should worship only him to be well protected. As a bull, bound through its nose, is held fast, so are all men bound by God's laws. Even as a player sets up and disperses his playthings according to his own will, so the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and then disperses them. O king, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle or not, or everything to exist in some impersonal absolute, or to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection, and nothing more." Narada looked compassionately at the Pandavas. Knowing them to be important instruments in the Lord's arrangements, he had often come to them with his instructions. The brothers listened in respect as he reassured them with eternal truths from the Vedas. He told them to give up their anxiety for Dhritarashtra, which was based on ignorance. They could do nothing for the blind king now. Every living being was moved by the force of God and should therefore depend on him alone. Ultimately, no man could protect or shelter another unless it was also the Lord's desire. Even the man who wanted to give shelter to another was himself in need of protection, being held in the jaws of inevitable death. Thus all intelligent men should worship the Lord as their only assurance of safety. Narada continued, "The Supreme Person, Krishna, in the guise of all-devouring time, has now descended on earth to eliminate the atheistic demons from the world. His work is almost complete, and he will soon depart. You Pandavas may wait here simply as long as the Lord remains on earth." Narada then informed the Pandavas that Dhritarashtra, accompanied by his wife and Vidura, had gone to the southern side of the Himalayas, to a mountain where there were many ashrams. He had engaged in mystic yoga, bringing his mind and senses under control. Soon he would attain samadhi and leave his material body, burning it to ashes by invoking the fire element from within himself. Gandhari would enter the fire and follow him to his next destination. And then Vidura, seized both by delight and grief at his brother's departure, would himself leave that place to end his own days. Narada stopped speaking and indicated that he was ready to leave. After being worshipped by the Pandavas, he rose into the sky and vanished. Yudhishthira thought about what he had said. It was glorious that Dhritarashtra had accepted such an end to his life. There was no point in lamenting, nor was there any need to fear that he might have taken offense. The old king had given up material affinities. He would no longer be thinking of material relationships and the politics associated with them. As Narada had made clear, Dhritarashtra was meditating on his pure spiritual identity, free of mundane attachments. As the Pandavas made their way back to the palace, they met Vyasadeva. He told them that Kunti had also gone with Dhritarashtra. The brothers were moved by grief to hear the news, but it was not a surprise. For a long time their mother had withdrawn herself from the world. Since she had prayed to Krishna that day that he left for Dwarka, she had been spending her days in meditation and prayer. She had eaten frugally, finally coming to the point where she took her food once every 30 days, and now she was gone. Thinking again of Narada's instructions and all of the wisdom that they had heard from the other rishis, they controlled their minds. Their mother had acted rightly. It was always the accepted custom to leave for the forest without announcement. After all, death never made announcements when it arrived.